On this episode of DC On Screen, Jason's got some numbers for us, don't he?
Mm-hmm. Plenty of crunchy math.
Crunchy math. And we don't have a lot of news, but we got some feedback right after this.
You think of Earth as a singular planet.
In fact, it is anything but.
For this is a story not of a universe,
but a multiverse.
Where universes and planets, such as Earth, were replicated and mirrored across a vibrating, infinite plane. Some barely different from the next.
Others drastically so.
This is DC On Screen. Every week, Dave and Jason talk about the multiverse of DC properties on film and television. But be warned, if it's been officially released, you can expect they'll spoil it.
Welcome into DC On Screen episode 525. I am your host, David C. Robertson. This, the man who taught me that Old Spice wasn't for cooking, Jason Goss.
Nice.
I kept wondering why I kept having tummy aches, you know?
Yeah. It was that and the massive amount of salt.
Yeah, well, I'm reaping what I sowed now, buddy.
There you go.
Oh, man. So, guys, it's happened. The thing that everyone said would never happen until, like, the last, like, 2 weeks. And then they were like, holy shit, I think it's going to happen. Aquaman crossed $1 billion.
Hashtag 1 billion.
Yeah. as they say.
I've seen that everywhere.
Yep. That's crazy.
It's awesome. Like, great movie. Totally deserves it.
Yeah. I am shocked. I honestly am. Like, I never would have thought Aquaman, of all things, would cross the $1 billion mark. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And not Wonder Woman, not BVS, not, you know, whatever. But hey, they did it right.
Yeah, nailed it.
Or at the very least, and the very least, right enough.
It was...
Evidently.
Like, I'm only a little bit joking about, I think the movie is so pretty that people watched it the first time and said, I'm going to come back and watch this stoned.
Oh, yeah.
At the very least, it was so pretty that... Somebody thought, like, that's worth seeing on a big screen again. Let me go back.
Yeah, the stoned college student is a very important demographic.
Yeah, yeah. Not that they have a ton of money, but man, they've got heart.
Yeah, well, some of them do have a ton of money because they're dealing drugs.
Right, and those people clearly made it to the movie.
Mm.
And so many people went without pot that night.
God bless those little red-eyed souls.
Yeah, yeah.
So, like I said a couple episodes ago, or last episode, I don't even know when it was. Yay! Research.
Yeah.
I woke up to a message from you.
Uh-huh. We'll see if I remember it.
There were just series of numbers, and I was confused, and you had to come over to my house because I was packing. I said I was moving to Canada.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I was dodging the draft, and you had to remind me, no, it's not Vietnam. I just sent you stats.
Oh, yeah. No, that's just... Well, it's your normal... first hour grogginess, plus you saw a bunch of numbers, and you probably did. That's not fair. I probably shouldn't have done that to you.
I'm not a math guy.
It's not something you enjoy
or understand.
I've got some stuff here, but it's not altogether complicated.
Mm-hmm.
It's really not. There's not we're not talking like linear regression and correlation. There's not enough data to do that. There's only 5 movies, mm-hmm, and 20 movies. You need about 30 data points to even really start thinking about that kind of thing.
Right, and you do bring Marvel into this. We talked about this before. We've talked about it a couple times now. I still don't understand it, but you're awesome. You're going to get this. They're going to understand it. The audience is way smarter than me. We have people telling me how to say shit and how to do. It's fine. They'll get it.
Yeah.
You bring Marvel into this.
Bear in mind, we do love corrections. So I'll tell you up front, my citations for this. I got... all of my data from either Rotten Tomatoes and their ratings.
Uh-huh.
And I got all of the budget numbers and the box office numbers from a website called The Numbers.
Mm-hmm. Let's not bury the lead, though. What exactly are you doing here?
We pretty much compared how Rotten Tomatoes and general audience ratings perform against actually how the movie went, or how the movie actually did. And then we also kind of compared the overall Rotten Tomatoes versus general audience landscape and what that looked like, and then also kind of the box office in general for some of these movies and how much they're really making and what the numbers really look like when you pull out. What did they spend on this? What did it actually make? Okay, how does the studio feel about it?
Mm-hmm. Now, you do bring Marvel into this. It is not in any way a jab. It's not a stab. We like Marvel. This is merely taking the biggest competitor in the market and comparing, right?
Correct. The only other operable franchise that this would work on. I mean, I could have used Star Wars or something, but this is really, the MCU is really the other one, you know?
I can't believe he used Marvel. Why is it going to be Marvel versus DC? Why couldn't he have used Hellboy?
And again, we're not making this Marvel versus DC it to be objectionable. We're making it Marvel's DC because that's the best comparison.
Right.
And then I'm just saying what the numbers said.
Yeah, now, I mean, I say we, but it's all you, buddy. I am not a numbers guy. I don't know what you're talking about.
I will explain
them
to you.
I get the gist.
I will explain them to you very, very slowly. But first, if you found it, would you briefly summarize how Rotten Tomatoes gets both its Rotten Tomatoes critic percentage and how it gets its general audience percentage when you go to any movie on their website, when you look for the tomato or the popcorn?
Yeah. Now, this is on RottenTomatoes.com/about. Under the segment Curation, Rotten Tomatoes has assembled a team of curators whose job it is to read thousands of movie and TV reviews weekly. The team collects movie and TV reviews from Tomato Meter approved critics and publications every day, generating Tomato Meter scores. Our curators carefully read these reviews, noting if the reviews are fresh or rotten, and choose a representative pull quote. Tomato Meter approved critics can also self-submit their reviews. That sounds to me like they are just reading the reviews and deciding by themselves what is rotten or fresh.
It does. When we kind of summarize the numbers here, we're going to go over what that means for the numbers.
But now, on the
it
audience
sounds like
score,
to get the percentage, and again, sounds like because there's a little bit of squiffiness here, but it sounds like they basically read the review and either put it in the bad pile or the good pile, and then they take the percentage and see what the pile looks like.
That would explain why you will get like a positive pull quote sometimes, but the review says it's rotten.
Correct.
Now, the audience score is apparently when at least 60% of users give a movie or TV show a star rating of 3.5 or higher, a full popcorn bucket is displayed to indicate its fresh status. When less than 60% of users give a movie or TV show a star rating of 3.5 or higher, a tipped over bucket is displayed to indicate its rotten status. So that's how the audience score is.
So 3.5 is your marker. And if you watch the movie and said it was a 3.4, they put you in the bad pile. If it was a 3.6, they put you in the good pile.
Right.
And then they take the percentage of the two piles. It's what it sounds like to me.
Yes.
So what does this amount to? All right. I'm going to go over the really complicated one first, just to get that out of the way. But if this one's the one that's a little... I kind of made up a statistic to do this. If it doesn't make sense, it doesn't make sense to you. It doesn't have to. It may not make sense at all. We just... I'm trying something here. Here is what we found on it. Okay. What I did was I took the Rotten Tomato Critic and the Rotten Tomato General Audience, and I basically took the World Box Office and sandbagged it versus that rating. So, like, for instance, Man of Steel, $668 million when it in the box office. Well, it got a Rotten Tomato rating of 56%. I'll just multiply it, just simple multiplication. So, in my mind, that means that, like, if Rotten Tomatoes give it an 100, this score would be 100. But instead, in my mind, that says Rotten Tomatoes' confidence in it means they thought it should have made around $374 million. It's just multiplying those two figures is all. That's just an example. So, when you take all of the average, you average all of, like, how far were they off? Rotten Tomatoes was off an average of $414 million over the course of the DCU franchise. General audience, 585. What it amounted to, no, I'm sorry, $414 million was what they thought the average movie should have made. 585 was what the general audience should have made, which means they were off by a percentage of, and this is from 100, which means the general audience was ranking these movies 26% off what they finally ended up making. Whereas Rotten Tomatoes was ranking them off 48% off what they were could have expected. Go to the MCU, and it's going to be a lot of this. It's going to be, here's the DCU, MCU. Same method, same figures, 85% for both of them. I mean, on the spot, 85% both ways. They were only off by $5 million total from Rotten Tomatoes versus general audience. 85% this confidence level. They were only 15% off. just tells me that there was a lot higher confidence in the movies, both in Rotten Tomatoes and general audience. Just DCU versus MCU. Just a different world as far as the confidence goes. Now, you look into the actual breakdown of those numbers. So let's look at the first thing we're going to look at is total difference in the ratings. All right, Rotten Tomatoes MCU 84%. Mm-hmm. Rotten Tomatoes general audience 83%. That was MCU scores. So average of all the ratings they gave them over the course of the franchise, 84% and 83%. We go to DCEU, Rotten Tomatoes 51%, general audience 73%.
Mm-hmm.
Still down both ways, but down pretty hard. Down pretty damn hard. You take the average of how far they were off, okay?
Yeah.
What you end up with aggregate across the entire franchise is a 1% difference between the critics and the audience in the MCU. And 1% positive, mind you. Meaning that the general audience overall gave it 1% less, was rated at 1% less than the Rotten Tomatoes rated it. So over there, they've got a positive skew. It's only by 1%, but it's a positive skew. And they're really close. That's what you get from that.
Mm-hmm.
Over in the DCU, you get a general audience of 73, Rotten Tomatoes of 51. So what that means is it was a negative 22% change. So not only are we in the negative now where Rotten Tomatoes is rating it way lower than general audience, it is way lower than the general audience, 22% off. Significant figure to me.
Mm-hmm.
What it amounts to is let's just look at the top five. Top five. And this is just the individual difference between the movies and the rankings on each side. All right. Coming in number one, for sure, no surprise probably, Batman vs. Superman. 36% right. Difference between what the general audience gave it versus Rotten Tomatoes. Coming in at number two, Suicide Squad and Justice League actually tied at negative 33. Still way, way off. Getting a little closer We got third, Man of Steel at negative 19%. Okay, now at number four, we finally get in the MCU at 18% for Black Panther. But guess what? 18% in the positive. They guessed 18% higher than the general audience did. Then we go back. Number five, Aquaman, negative 16%. Those are the top five. I guess six if you include Justice League, but they're tied. Those are our top six out of the entirety of 26 movies. All both franchises, 26 movies. And the top six differences by a wide margin in most of them is DCEU.
Mm-hmm.
So, you want to get more specific about it? Here's where it stands. Let's look at the first five movies. I didn't have totals for Aquaman, so we left that out. Also, there's a reason it should be the first five. Number six is the Avengers in the MCU, right?
Uh-huh.
All right. First five movies. Budget, total, for MCU, $783 million. Total box office, $2.29 billion. Not too shabby. That comes in at a 293% return on investment. If anyone does not know what that term means, it literally just means the percentage difference between what you made versus what you spent. Simple.
Mm-hmm.
Go to the DCU. $1.1 billion on the budget for the first five movies. Really swinging for the fences there. Total box office, $3.76 billion. Comes in at a 342% return on investment. That is 49% higher than the MCU in the first five movies.
Wow.
Think about the words failing franchise that you've read all over the news. And then I present to you those first five numbers.
Mm-hmm.
So, not to say it's been that way the whole time. So look at it. MCU starts to course correct after Avengers 1, 675% return on investment. Iron Man slightly down at 608. After that, they kind of average back down to 400. Still, awesome, right? No losers here. Another big peak at 503 with Spider-Man, and then series high with Infinity War, which gobbled up all the money in the universe. Final numbers, not including Aquaman's final, but we're really close. I mean, this is as of today, Aquaman's numbers. So it's still going to make a little bit more, but it's not going to be terribly relevant. MCU, total budget, $3.84 billion. They make $17.5 billion.
Mm-hmm.
Good God. Comes in at 456% return. DCEU, $1.26 billion. Now, doesn't look like that big figure now, $4.77 billion in return. That's still 379%.
Mm-hmm.
Which means also they've gone up from 342 to 379 between these last two movies because Aquaman, also made all the money.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a fun part, though. And this is why I'm saying, this is not... The MCU versus DCU thing. I'm showing these figures. We're just trying to present that there is something going on a little bit. That's going to be our takeaway. But altogether, here's another fun takeaway. as an outsourced product, just outsourced from America. This makes a little over $4 billion in total box office revenue in 2017 alone between the two franchises. Let's assume 70% of that is domestic, which is conservative. That leaves $1.2 billion on the table for exclusively international sales. During 2017, the U.S. gross domestic product, the GDP, was around $19.4 trillion, which means the comic book movies alone contributed around 6% to everything America earned in the entirety of 2017.
Mm-hmm.
Good dear God. And they did that at an average of 270% return, which means, again, good dear God, that's a lot of money. Hashtag America. Mind you, that does not include television or print sales, and I don't want to include merchandise in saying that doesn't mind it because there's so many... A lot of the merchandise is actually produced off-season. I wouldn't even know how to guess at that figure. But that doesn't include television or print sales. These things make so much money. So much money. And I want to give you that figure because next time anyone makes fun of you for watching a comic movie, you say, hey, fucker, we brought in 6% of the money that this country made in 2017.
Are there still people making fun of others for listening to watching?
It's still out there. It's just not as hot. Nerd is cool these days, but it's still out there.
Yeah.
Okay, end of rant. I hope everyone's still with me. Dave, any takeaways?
Any takeaway? The bias is real?
I think that's evident. Yeah, I really do. I think, I know we've said it, and I don't want to, and there's still arguments about it. I mean, that's a hashtag. The bias is real. Like, it's there. I can see it in real numbers. Again, anyone, go pull the same numbers and tell me what I did wrong, and I'll gladly retract it.
Yeah. I am a little curious as to how, which I'm not sure how you would even come up with this, but, or if it's different for every movie or whatever, but I am curious how the international box offices factored in, given that the studios make less money for international sales than they do for domestic sales.
True. I mean, yeah, there's a percentage chunk of that that stays out. And by the way, I didn't mean to mention that these were world box office sales. I wasn't doing domestic.
Right. I've heard people give conflicting reports as to how much that means. I've seen certain people say like every dollar internationally is like a fourth of a dollar for the studios, whereas every dollar domestically is like half for the studio. I've seen those kinds of numbers, but
I really don't.
I don't know where those numbers come from.
I wouldn't even guess until I've seen a contract.
Mm-hmm.
Like unless I've seen a contract or like had a quick sit down with Sugihara or somebody, I really wouldn't know how to guess.
Yeah, because I've just seen a lot of people trying to, because Aquaman only did $291 million.
Here?
Yeah, here, and most of their, I think it was like 71%
on a budget
of
160, it only nearly doubled its money.
Yeah, 71% of poor its thing. Take, though, is foreign. So a lot of people are saying, it's not that big of a deal, the $1 billion. And, they're just a bunch of angry assholes chewing on sour grapes as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I mean, I
was a little curious if you'd factor that in.
Another fun one, though, like average, just an average, because, they're going to be heavy hitters. And, I mean, God, like Infinity War tore up with freaking $2 billion. I mean, it's huge. Average for the franchise for MCU, $875 million. Not a bad average.
Yeah.
$796 for DCEU. Again, not a bad average. And they've got they're spending more in their films. Like it's $210 billion for the DCU and $191 million. Did I say billion? I meant million. For the MCU. I mean, they're spending on average another $20 million per movie.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they're starting to learn that lesson too. You look at like the Joker, which we know is going to be made on a smaller budget, stuff like that. I think they're Birds of Prey. We're starting to hear maybe a smaller budget. I think they're starting to learn their lesson on that too. They don't have to make these big tentpole things. Like even Aquaman wasn't that big a budget for what we saw.
And I can't remember what exactly. I'll have to look it up. But if that even – that information is even out there. But I want to say I read that Shazam was like a third of Aquaman's budget. Something like that.
That would not be much at all. Let me try this. Hold on.
It's not, I'm not seeing it on
– trusty the numbers. Yeah. No data yet that I can see.
Yeah, they don't have Aquaman's budget listed on Box Office Mojo either.
Yeah, I went to the numbers, same place, pulled everything else. They don't have the budget yet for Shazam.
I would love it if part of it would be annoying. Yeah, they've got, like, if you just Google Aquaman, it just says budget 160 to 200 million. Mm-hmm. So, I was thinking Shazam was probably somewhere in the 50 to 75 range, but I don't know.
Could be.
I think they're learning the lesson. Like, the most they've ever spent on a movie in the DC was $300 million, and that was Justice League. Like, a lot of that $300 million didn't get into the final cut. A lot of it was paying. I mean, when we talked about a few shows ago, like, we've talked about it several times, they brought in several people to come take a look at it, maybe see what they would do with the movie. That if they paid those people that came in, said, hey, here's what I would do, and were never heard from again, that mm-hmm. goes into the budget for the movie.
Now, I could swear I read Shazam's budget at some point, but back in November, it looks like they did order reshoots and expanded the budget mm-hmm. a fair amount. So they probably haven't updated the numbers for the budget anywhere. So that's probably why most sites don't have it anymore.
Gotcha. I mean, we'll be able to look at that when it comes out. And we know what we're comparing against now. But the major takeaways were, one, in the ratings, clearly different. Clearly an entirely different ballpark. And mm-hmm. don't get me wrong, general audience versus MCU on DCU, like, yeah, the general audience is still, on average, ranking the DCE lower. But
mm-hmm.
it's tanking in the Rotten Tomatoes crowd. Just tanking.
Yeah.
Whole different ballpark. I mean, there's only 10% difference. And think about how much bad press these things get. For the general audience rating on the MCU of 83 versus the DCEU's 73, that is a huge amount of negative press. That it only really shows up as a 10%er.
Yeah.
That's not a lot. That's a grade level. I mean, that's a grade point, you know. It clearly shows up in the ratings. To me, again, one of the big takeaways for me was the top five, the first five before Avengers hit. Again, not a failed franchise. When these were at the same point, and then now we're at the sixth movie, what Avengers make? $1.5 billion? It's not a... I mean, Aquaman's just past $1 billion. It's not that far off still. I bet if I ran the first six right now, it's probably maybe still DCU winning. Or at least they're pretty even.
Yeah.
The other thing is the way... All right, think about again the way Rotten Tomatoes is gathering their numbers.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we'll talk... in general audience, it's... It's not the worst metric. I would much prefer it if it was a true one. If you rank it, you give it a ranking. You give it a 63% and your score goes whole hog to the final score. That's your score of 63% and you just average all the percentages.
Mm-hmm.
That would be a clean, clear test. The 3.5 thing is, it's weird, but at least it's a metric. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, at least it's a thing. And you can see what they're doing, and I don't think it's the best way to gather that data, but, like, I don't know what's stopping them from doing it the other way.
Yeah, at least it's not some asshole sitting there going, like, well, I read this whole review, and he loves the actors, the plot, the themes, everything, but he didn't like the score. That sounds like a rotten score to me.
Sounds like he was not big on it. Tomato. But that's the thing, is here's the loop you're seeing. All right. Think about right before a movie, you start to see a Rotten Tomatoes score. Right before the premiere, you start seeing the score, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that score apparently appears because they have this team of experts sitting around reading thousands of things. Which, I mean, there can't be thousands. It's got to be maybe in the hundreds for an individual film.
I would think, yeah, maybe. I mean, maybe 100.
Like, unless 200. They're reading, like, the Pittsburgh Examiner or some shit. Like, how deep do they go with their research, you know?
Well, I mean... I don't know, man. Let's look. Let's see what just.
I mean, I've seen some of those, and they do just. It's mostly just the big stuff. It's like Newsweek or USA Today or some crap. Like they mostly just take the big guys. That I mean, when you look at their pull quotes, it's not going to be, you know, some dude's blog in Oklahoma. It's normally the big guys with an actual
All right. Venue. So critic reviews for Aquaman, there were 317.
Okay.
That's not thousands.
It's not thousands. I mean, they're doing thousands a day, but it's for X amount of movies, right?
Right.
So let's say you got those 300 reviews. Somebody sat down, read it, did what you're describing as, and, you know, granted, you're doing an exaggerated case, but it's still possible that it really does seem to be their interpretation, the curator's interpretation of their review. And then it seems to be like, well, that was bad or that was good. Binary. One or the other. That means that a few days before the movie comes out, when the moratorium for the press is lifted, whenever that happens,
mm-hmm.
the cycle begins, right? All these sources finally become available for them to go back and review and start to do their rating. Okay, well, it only takes a couple days for those for them to get through those 300-something reviews. I mean, hell, it's just 300 reviews. I could do that in an 8-to-5 day. Get them on, get them rated, get a number on the site.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you have the first reviews, which are, you know, maybe they're mixed. Maybe it's, you know, 80% they feel good about it. Well, then you get their review, which has now been, you know, sorted through by the curators at Rotten Tomatoes, and it becomes a number. Now it's like 63% rotten or fresh or whatever. Okay. Well, then begins the next news cycle where now the same people that were starting this process talk about how it's got a bad rating on Rotten Tomatoes. And it creates this cyclone of doom that picks up all the fun and whimsy from our childhoods and dumps it in a fucking dumpster. That's what happens. It's a cycle. And it's actually pretty easy to see how the damn cycle happens because everyone looks at Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah.
It's frustrating to lay this thing open. I was not happy doing these numbers.
It's an unfortunate circumstance of the culture today.
Yeah. Only takeaway I can give, like, we should probably get to more news, but the only takeaway I've got is there's no way to trust. It's not like you can't trust any news or you can't trust any rating or something like that. I mean, I specifically don't suggest trusting the Rotten Tomatoes ratings. The general audience is a little closer, sure, but not the critic rating. You can only like the only thing I think you can reasonably do with this system is find some people or some sources that normally you agree with their take on it. And just seek them out. Like, cut out the bullshit aggregate numbers and just, like, find your people and see what they think if it's something you care to do.
Yeah.
Otherwise, the only sure thing is to go to the damn movie.
Yeah. Like, even the audience scores on Rotten Tomatoes for Aquaman have diminished to a 79%. They were in the mid-80s last time I checked.
Yeah.
And you have things like people complaining, like, let's see.
See, I would reckon, though, that a score dropping a little bit over, say, 4 weeks, like what we're at right now, is probably mm-hmm. standard. Because think about it. If you waited 3 or 4 weeks to see this movie, you weren't that excited about it. You walked in, your, let's face it, slightly pessimistic concerns were probably met because that's what you're going to see. And I'm not saying confirmation bias, but in some cases, yes, I am saying confirmation bias. But at the very least, you weren't ever really excited about it, so why are you going to leave excited about it? Unless it just really did blow you away. And yeah, you could give it a worse ranking than you would somebody who went and saw it on Thursday night.
Yeah, and I don't know how Rotten Tomatoes decides which reviews get on the front page before you have to click view all audience reviews. But like all of these are pretty negative. Like even the positive ones are like old fashioned concept of hot machos beating each other with their phallic pointy weapons.
Any movie. Look at the subtext of it, and it's almost any movie, especially over the summer.
What about Marley and Me?
Yeah. old-fashioned but trope about thing we love dies. I mean, it's fine.
Penises.
Yep.
But yeah, Aquaman's got an A- on CinemaScore. So, I mean, you know.
See, that feels more accurate to me. But again, go find your source. Go find the people that you actually trust on this.
Yeah, see, CinemaScore, Holmes and Watson, D+.
I gotta say, that feels right to me right now. I haven't seen the movie.
Yeah.
But so far, those two numbers track. They track for me.
Based on the two trailers I saw.
Let's see how much I really trust them. Look up Shaun of the Dead real quick.
Oh, okay. You're not gonna like that result.
B-.
No results.
Aw. Well, better to stay silent and be thought an idiot.
All right.
Get some news.
Let's get some other stuff.
I do hope we didn't just bore the shit out of you. I think there was some interesting stuff in there. And if anything, I hope some of the stuff you've been thinking was happening was maybe validated by that.
Mm. All right. We've got a bit of a rumor for the Batman.
Sure.
We got this covered. It is claiming that Oswald Cobblepot, the Penguin, is going to be one of the main antagonists in the Batman, and doesn't say what kind of role he'd be playing. We have heard that Matt Reeves specifically requested that Birds of Prey not use the Penguin. Josh Gad, of course, jumped right on and signed off on Twitter with a tweet that said good night with a K and a gif of Burgess Meredith as the Penguin. So I continue to be dismayed by the idea of Josh Gad as the Penguin.
Yeah, I'm not on board. I'm also not convinced that he is just not like
trolling
crazily going after this role.
Yeah. I know a lot of people do want him. I've heard a lot of people talk about, you know, Nick Frost, which would be fine, or Andy Serkis, which would be probably pretty damn good. I personally want Mark Shepard. I'll always want Mark Shepard. Badger from Firefly. Crowley from Supernatural.
Yeah, be great.
Jim Sterling on Leverage. Roma Lampkin from Battlestar Galactica. Love that guy. Think he'd be a perfect Penguin. He was basically Penguin as Badger on Firefly.
Yeah, basically. What did you think of Zach Galifianakis?
Zach Galifianakis is the Penguin?
Hadn't occurred to me, but how does that sit with you?
Not well.
Not well?
If
He's got range. I wouldn't kick it out of bed. I'd take that audition for sure. I'd sit down at that audition.
Sure. I would watch the audition, but I don't feel like it's a knock out of the park or anything. Like, when you say Zach Galifianakis as
like you'll Penguin, go to the audition, but you double parked expecting to be out of there pretty quickly.
Yeah, when you say Galifianakis as Penguin, I hear Jesse Eisenberg as Lex Luthor. I'm excited to see what he does with it, but I don't think he's right for it.
It may not go over well. Fair enough. Fair enough. We'll fantasy cast him some other time.
So, yeah. The Ella J. Basco girl who's playing Cassandra Cain in Birds of Prey has confirmed that they had their first day of principal photography.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's awesome.
The Harley Quinn Birds of Prey account on Twitter had already said, like, hey, we're filming next week.
Mm-hmm. So, that has happened.
So,
Because there's not a lot of news, we're going to jump right over to Gotham.
Yeah. It's not, wasn't big. Wasn't big at all.
No. Gotham is apparently going to have a full-on Batman episode.
Okay.
Cameron Monaghan was talking about their inability to use the word Joker, and he says, for now. That was the case when I talked about it prior. I will say we've been given certain liberties in this final season that we haven't been given before. That's going to make itself pretty apparent as you watch it. All I'll say is when you have an episode that's a full-on Batman episode running around in the future, you're going to have characters that you'll expect to see. I don't think it's a spoiler to say at this point that it's 10 years in the future. That's been talked about openly.
We knew there was going to be a jump at some point.
Yeah, that's been talked about openly by the producers and the showrunners. I don't want to say exactly what my role in that is, but it was kick-ass. It's one of the coolest opportunities I've ever had. He also said, he says it's a very strange and surreal thing, but on a show this is strange and absurd and heightened as Gotham, it makes sense. It's a weird challenge. It's definitely not what I expected going into it, to develop one character for as long as I did and be like, all right, time for a new thing that's also distinct. And then I've had to do that again recently in the final season as well. So, third version?
Neat.
He says, I won't say how or why, but there's another huge transition for the character, too. It's definitely an extremely unique challenge that's unique to the comic book medium.
Very cool. I'm
excited about all of that.
I'm not sure they intended to have Cameron be such a part of the series, like such an exciting part of the series. I don't know how that went down as far as like them talking to him and him getting hired as like some kid who's maybe a nod to him and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it wouldn't surprise me at all if they kind of got him in, started looking at what he could do and just went, dude, this guy's a weapon. We've got to use this.
That's he's the kind of actor that like showrunners change plans for.
Exactly. He really is that good. And I mean, he's backed it up on everything I've ever seen him in. Like I haven't watched Shameless every episode, but it's one of those Shameless is one of those shows where when my wife is watching it and I wander through the living room, that's where I sit for the next 40 minutes because you can't turn away. It's a really compelling show. And every time I see him, I think, oh, this is going to be good. And he never fails me. Never.
Yeah. He's good. He's really good. And I just feel foolish because I know both of us were geeking out like in the first episode of Gotham, like looking at that comedian on Fish Mooney's stage going, oh, is that him? Is that him?
Yeah. Yeah, I know.
No, it wasn't.
No.
It wasn't him.
But good on them for giving us a little nod. Good on, I mean,
would it be,
a little tease.
Would it be... Would it be funny if he was? Would it be funny if they just went back and, like, showed that guy and, like, brought it, somehow he was, like, behind everything and he was the real Joker?
Yeah. Or, like, there's the Ace Chemicals episode and Cameron Monaghan goes into the chemicals and that guy comes out. And we're like, oh, that's where I'd have to, like, pause it and just slow clap for 5 straight minutes staring at the screen, not blinking.
I don't know, man. I don't, not with that scenario specifically, but.
Man, you took a chance here.
If it turned out that, like, we think that the Joker or the Jeremiah or whoever has won, and then there's, like, just a bullet in his head, and we pan over, and it's, like, the real Joker who's been, like, gassing these dudes and turning them into, like, versions of himself, and it was that dude drunk from the stage, I would be like, holy shit.
Right. And then he'd have to have a different MO, though. He'd have to tell you something along the lines like, that guy was all about plans, I'm all about wrecking him and fucking run off into the distance. Hee hee hee.
How did that laugh go again?
I think it was like a 4-inch tall horse. I mean, seriously, if you heard that sound effect, you'd be like, okay, shark jumped and exit. Done watching that show.
I almost had that moment when everyone got stabby after watching
Joel. Yeah, the stabby moment was say, like, okay, all right, what are we doing here?
Yeah. All right, over to the CW. They've announced a premiere date for Legends of Tomorrow's return, and that is April Fool's Day.
No kidding. That's actually the date. Just saying.
Yep. April Fool's Day. They're going to trade slots with Arrow. Arrow's going to be moving to 9 p.m. It's not going away.
Right.
It's just moving. Jesse L. Martin is coming back to The Flash with episode 15. And Todd Helbing even says there's an explanation and then there's another sort of thing down the line that will give more explanation as to why Joe was gone for so long. So they're actually going to write that into the show in some way. But the real reason was because he hurt his back and had to leave.
Right.
Glenn Winter.
Good on them, by the way, for going the extra mile and writing that in for us.
Yeah. I'm happy to see him come back. I'm happy he's okay.
I'm happy the Flash writers have some follow through on stuff, man. They do. They always seem to have your back. You think you see something and you go, wait a second, and they'll come back.
Yeah.
One day they'll explain Deadbolt to me.
I don't think they ever will.
I might just go, like, because Twitter will shut you down if you create a fake account. Like, they're actually pretty good at getting a fake account if you're just some amateur that doesn't know how to create a fake account.
Mm-hmm.
It has occurred to me before to create, like, just stay up all night creating like 300 fake accounts and go at the, because the Flash Writer Room has their own Twitter account, and just like all of them all at once explain Deadbolt. I don't think it'd happen. I don't think it'd work.
They'll say no.
Yeah. And they'll whisper no.
And that's been your weekly Rorschach reference.
Yep.
Anyway, yeah, Glenn Winter. he's been directing DC TV. He's been doing it since Smallville. He directed the pilot episode of Supergirl, Legends of Tomorrow, Titans, and Doom Patrol. And strong. He's going to be directing the Stargirl pilot.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Good resume.
Sure.
He gets characters.
And this is aggravating, but at least I know where I'm going to be throwing my money at some point.
There you go.
DC is actually going to be releasing an extended Death and Return of Superman animated movie as a single film.
Oh.
They're going to take the Death of Superman, they're going to take Reign of the Supermen, they're going to shove them together and throw in additional footage.
Oh, that was going to be my question. Are they going to cut it so it makes sense or throw in more stuff? It's... Okay, I got, yeah, that's a fuck you, take my money.
Mm-hmm. And that's going to be coming out later this year. No actual release date yet.
Yeah. And man, you've got to catch up on that universe in general, on the animated universe in general. I think that's a going forward something we're going to be addressing pretty pretty distinctly.
And
pretty deliberately.
Indeed.
Yeah.
That's how that goes. We've got a lot of listener feedback. We haven't really done it in a couple months. I tried to be... sparing with it, I guess.
It's like you just let the mail pile up at the door.
I kind of did.
Yeah.
But, you know.
I mean, not really. We pay attention. But
We do. And if we had a whole big conversation on social media or something, I didn't really include it here. But we had Eli Hernandez responding to me saying that last week's episode was too long to include feedback, which, by the way, it wasn't really that long. It turned out after editing, it was like an hour. I felt bad about that. I was like, oh, well, I promised a really long episode.
I do apologize, and I'm still just adjusting, but it was a little long. It was a little long for me in between baby naps. We're still getting there with sleep scheduling and stuff.
Yeah,
so but that's Eli mostly says those my long... fault, Eli, and I apologize.
Yeah, Eli says those long ass podcasts entertain me on the long commute to work. DCU fan fam also said I like the long episodes too. I drive for a living. Your podcast helped me enjoy it. And that's always really nice to hear.
Totally appreciate that. And I get it too. Like I love having like a 2-hour podcast that I know is going to be like it. The way I listen to them, I listen, you know, at my job, I kind of have alone time somewhere between 5 minutes at a time and maybe like 45 seconds at a time. So that 2-hour podcast could be my entire day. But I do love that, like following one story the entire day.
Yeah.
Totally get it. I appreciate that though.
Randy SF45 on Twitter says, friendly suggestion. Take a few minutes to recommend some reading materials / storylines related to upcoming movies or television shows. Now, correct me if I'm wrong. I don't think I've ever heard an actual friendly suggestion that started with the phrase friendly suggestion. It's always what a hitman says when he's bringing a message to someone who screwed over the boss.
Yeah. Or like, friendly suggestion, I recommend the urn for your pet, not actual burial. It's kind of messy. You know, that kind of thing.
Right.
you want to go with cremation. Those are mobile services now, by the way. It's freaky.
Yeah.
I'm
actually gonna take him at his word here. I'm gonna say this was an actual friendly suggestion.
I read that felt friendly. I didn't feel
okay.
No one was coming at us, bro. No, none of that.
I think I might be wrong. I thought we already did that.
I think we do sometimes.
But I also don't feel like it's necessarily like I feel like that is a recipe for disaster.
Why?
Because when you, here's why.
You had said because when before you say I like, said why. Go ahead.
That's what happened. Yeah, that's what I was laughing.
That was my.
But yeah.
Assess. Yeah. That's how.
That was your contribution.
Yeah. That was how I assess what just happened as well. Sorry.
Here's why. You say like, oh, well, look at that. The news says that The Flash, the first episode of The Flash, is going to be called Flashpoint. Mm-hmm. So I recommend you go out and read the Flashpoint story that they did on DC or did, you know, in the DC comics. And then people go out and they read that. And then they come back and they go, it was nothing like that. Which is what happened on Twitter.
It is what happens on Twitter. And
Facebook. Like,
it is what happens on Twitter.
It was a flashpoint.
But I think that's a small percentage. I think the people who enjoy watching the shows but don't really enjoy reading or don't feel like investing the money in actually reading. Which, by the way, Comixology? Thank you. Just picked up DC Comics too. Like that's going to be something that helps a lot of people. If you want to get into comics and read them, that's going to be a cheap way to get in. Comixology's got a lot of stuff now.
Absolutely. And also, if you're an Amazon Prime member, just go ahead and download the Kindle app because, you know, you never know. Like
it'll pop on and off there, but yeah, you can find stuff there.
Yeah, I got a notification this week that I could read Tom King's Batman Volume 1.
Totally worth it.
The I Am Gotham storyline, and I could read it for free. So I totally went over there and read that. Now, I didn't care for it.
You're not the biggest Tom King fan right now.
Yeah, I read it, and it just didn't appeal to me, really. It wasn't. There were several things that just kind of like it was just a boring storyline for me. Like I liked a lot of the characterizations. I feel bad because I follow Tom King on Twitter. I like him.
Just didn't like the story part. It's okay. He's got a 100-issue run planned that was part one of. Mm-hmm. So there's going to be plenty of time to like what he does with the story. If you like the characterization, it's a good start.
Yeah.
I think that's 1 foot out of two, to be honest. I mean, do you like how he presents the characters? Yes. Do you like the story? No. If that was two for two, you're 100% a Tom King writing Batman fan.
Right.
But
yeah.
Also, like, if you are the kind of person who doesn't, either willfully doesn't or doesn't read the actual books, yeah, I mean, if we tell you about the books, then maybe that's a checklist in your mind, and maybe one day you go read it, and when you either can or want to, and you enjoy it or you don't, whatever.
Yeah.
There's a percentage, though, in the middle that will maybe go actually read it, not like it, and complain about it. But otherwise, I think a lot of people that are involved in it and read stuff, when you hear about something new, you kind of go, oh, crap, I didn't know about that. And maybe actually you enjoy the process of reading it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's going to be like one of those loud minority things.
Right. As for Randy and his suggestion, it's a fine suggestion. I just thought we were already doing that, kind of. But
I got to give him this. Like, yeah. Sometimes I think we take it for granted that people have read what we've read.
Yeah, I think so.
For sure.
That's probably true.
I mean, even then, yeah. we just did a Rorschach reference 5 minutes ago and didn't mention the word Watchmen, you know?
Yeah. Go read Watchmen.
Go read Watchmen.
That should never be a question. Just go read Watchmen.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what they're doing. In other mediums. Now, I did read this feedback, though, before last week, and I made sure to drop a couple of recommendations in that episode. But, yeah, I mean, sometimes it's really obvious. Like, if they're making Batman the Long Halloween, go read that.
I mean, they're not only but they're taking from it to do the show Gotham. They're taking points from that. They're also taking a huge amount of the concept of No Man's Land, which is, an omnibus almost. Like, that's a lot.
Right.
But and anywhere you dig into that is pretty interesting.
See, I disagree.
You didn't like it?
I cannot in good conscience recommend No Man's Land. I thought it was mostly boring as shit.
Mm.
Like, I liked elements that were really cool, but it just went on too much. It went on too long.
Maybe it did go on for a while. It has one hell of a climax, though.
It was like the Batman clone saga.
Yeah. Right.
For me. Like this, you know, Spider-Man clone saga from the 90s?
No.
Oh, God. It was a whole thing where, like...
I don't like clone sagas, so this is probably gonna.
Yeah, it was. It was a thing that where they were like, okay, we have like a 4 or 5 issue arc, and then they wound up. It was a popular thing, so Marvel was like, keep doing that, kid, and they wound up making it like years long. It felt like it may have even actually been years long, where it was like, oh, well, you're not the real Peter Parker, you're Ben Reilly, and. You're a clone, and which one is the clone? And they have in recent years apparently gone back, and I don't actually know about this. I just heard Brent actually talk about this, how they actually came, Brent from Fans Without Borders, sorry, references. Mm-hmm. God, sorry, Randy.
Citations, citations.
Damn it. Cite your references. Mm-hmm. Brent from Fans Without Borders was just telling Ray about this, how they just came back and... Or maybe he wasn't. Maybe I was listening to an old episode. That's possible, too. But he was talking about how they came out with a condensed version that was really the original, like, idea and the original intention of the creators, pretty much, without, like, the 3 years' worth of bullshit that Marvel had them shoehorn in.
Because the sales were up, and they're like, man, just keep going. Right. I don't care. When these sales go down, we'll tell you to wrap it up. But that's how it works. So anyway. It really is. I mean... And think about this. Every now and then, when you hate something like that, think about this. If they were making enough money that they told them, hey, continue this storyline that really doesn't have enough gas in it, there's probably at least one property that you loved that got to continue because they had that money.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, as far as No Man's Land is considered, concerned, I know there's a lot of people out there that like it. I love elements of it. I really do. My favorite thing out of that entire saga is... Sarah Essen coming upon the Joker with all of those babies.
Dude, that's a big moment. It's a big moment in DC history.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It gives you some of the edges of some of those characters in a huge way. But, again, it's one of those things that, like, it's a huge thing. Dig into it a little bit. Maybe do what Dave's saying and just kind of find a summary of it at least, and you'll probably enjoy that.
Find a summary. Maybe, you know, see, you know what we should do? Is we should just offer like a recommendation portion on our website, just a page on our website that has like a reading list.
We could, but honestly, if you pulled it out, we usually recommend all the same things when people ask us because we have our favorites.
Yeah, we do. Anyway, I'll try to be better about that, man. I'm sorry.
Definitely, if it crosses our mind, if there's something we can think of, we'll be more exposition. Use more exposition on that. Like actually say the title of, hey, you should check this out.
Yeah, but I'm so woefully behind that anything after the new 52, I'm probably going to be just really behind on. So, like, say, like, oh, yeah, we're going to go see Aquaman. If you want to, you know, read a comic, you should read blah, blah, blah from the new 52. I can, like, look around and find that, but from self-experience, I can't recommend a lot.
Yeah.
Like, I've, like, wandered into bookstores and read pieces of it.
Yeah. I mean, look, there's 80 years of this company and the companies that were there right before it bought into them and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. There's 80 years of history and some change.
You're much more caught up than I am on a lot of things.
On the newer stuff, I actually am right now on the stuff that's like current. But, dude, it's 80 years worth of stuff. We're not going to misrepresent ourselves. If we haven't read enough about something, we're not going to say it. So
yeah.
But if we've read something, we're blown away. Hell yeah, we'll tell you.
Mm-hmm. All right, so Matthew Salvatore says, what do you think the next DCEU film will be to go into production, Flash or The Batman? He said this on January 6th, so I'll answer him, Birds of Prey.
That is for sure the easy answer.
That is the easiest and most accurate answer, Birds of Prey.
I think the other answer I want to use right now is The Batman. I think that one's the closest to getting a trigger pulled.
Yeah, there are reports that say November.
I mean, and you know, reports are what they are. You just have to, dude. A lot of the stuff that we cover, a lot of stuff that gets in a headline is like reading tea leaves, dude. Just tarot card bullshit. And if you ask me, tea leaves, tarot card, whatever. My guess is The Batman.
Right. The last time I tried to figure out, based on reports, the last time I tried to figure out what was going into production next, I found out I was going to have a profitable month, but I was going to have cancer.
Right.
So it was,
yeah,
it's a little off-putting. Yeah. There was definitely some good and bad.
And you turned over your palm and found lucky numbers. Yeah. that were never there before. Yeah. And I have a vague taste of sugar in my mouth, and my teeth hurt. God help us. We're both on diets right now. We don't know what sugar tastes like anymore.
Oh, I do. I work it in.
You did? You managed to? Yeah. You carved out some time. It's milk. I carved out room for milk.
Yeah. Sweet. All right. So Michael milk. Kennedy in our Facebook group, which I haven't told you guys about in a long time. So there's that. I'll put a link in the show notes if you want to come join our Facebook group. Michael Kennedy responded to us because we didn't know where we were going to find Epics and watch Pennyworth. He says, if you have one of the unlimited data plans from AT&T, you can get access to HBO for no extra charge. If you have Spectrum, you can access Epics for no extra charge. I am not a Superman fan. However, Red Son is the most amazing Superman comic in general and I've ever read. That was a recommendation we gave.
Yeah, we did specifically cite that.
Take that, Randy. I'm sorry.
In all fairness, it was under the headline of, they're thinking about a Red Son thing.
Yeah, they're making a Red Sun thing. You should go read that, Red Sun.
Yeah.
He says, I thought the whole time I was wasting my time reading it until the end. Wow, that is... How do you get that?
I don't know. I don't agree with you. I don't... I did enjoy the whole thing. Like, I was on the edge of my seat the entire time. I really enjoyed that one, but, like, straight through.
He says, ending is where it's at, so don't skip ahead. Read it, then reread it.
I do get, like, the ending is better than the rest of it in the sense that it is fucking groundbreaking. But, I mean, I enjoyed the first part, too. So, that's the only part I disagree with.
Yeah. He did say we had a show. He told us, great show, guys. Congratulations, Jason, I suppose, on your baby.
Possibly.
Are we congratulating people
for procreating
them?
I have no other accolades of which I can speak at the moment.
I'm just
also
kidding.
And a lot of dads will understand this, I don't matter anymore. I just don't. No one has asked after me in quite some time.
Hmm.
It's a thing. It's fine. I get where I am in the
hierarchy.
I get it. I totally get it. And I agree with it. It's just kind of funny to sit there and watch and be like, wow, no one cares about me at all anymore.
Yeah, I think
my
a lot
parents
of...
will ask, like, how's the kid?
Yeah.
How's Christian holding up? She okay? Yeah, she's fine. She's fine.
Yeah, I think it's... I think in a lot of ways, it's like your wife is going to be like, well, now I have two kids, and that one can walk and feed himself.
No, that's the fact, though. Like, I could break an arm, and I swear a lot of people's first thought would be like, oh, that's going to be a lot of pressure on Christian. That's going to be a lot of pressure on her.
Yeah, you break your arm, and someone's like, you weren't holding the baby, were you?
Right.
No? Oh, okay, good. So the baby's fine. Yeah, the baby's fine. I fell and broke my arm.
I can hold the 10.5-pound object. I just fell, and now I'm broken, and they're already looking at my wife and my daughter to make sure they're okay and can adjust to the new situation.
Right.
I'm genuinely not complaining. I get it. It's just kind of funny to think about.
Yeah. But that's okay, man. You matter to me.
I'll take care of myself. It'll be all right.
If we were on a sinking ship, I would push your wife and child out of the way to make sure you got to a lifeboat.
You know, I would be both disappointed and proud at the same time. Well, he does. He loves me, and I respect that. That is a ride or die motherfucker right there. But kind of wish he'd made a different choice.
To be fair, I would also stay on the sinking ship to make sure your wife and child got in the boat with you.
See, that's ride or die. That's a that's the kind of guy you want to decide. We should host a podcast together.
One day. All right. Anyway, Michael Kennedy says, Jason, it gets easier until they are four. And he found that really funny for some reason. It sounds like he has some sort of experience.
It read to me as slightly maniacal. Like, that's when she broke him.
Right.
The other funny part is I've heard every single number. I mean, up into the, like, 20s?
Yeah.
I've heard every single number is like, oh, it's, you know, it's okay till blah, blah, blah. It's okay till X. It's okay till X. It's okay. It's all a matter of personal experience. You alone will have to find out when your child betrays you.
It all depends on when you wean them from everything and make them be self-efficient. Sorry, I was thinking about my college years.
Right. Fun times.
I was mostly self-deficient in those years.
Or when they just decide they don't need you anymore. That could be at 8, 12.
Yeah, that's right.
22, who knows?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My parents are still, you know, wondering when I will decide I don't need them.
Yeah, right.
Like calling up, what's a catalytic converter again? Don't you have Google? Yeah.
I don't know how to work Google. Well, you go to the internet and you ask it something and you've Googled it. It's that simple.
I'm just kidding. My parents don't know what Google is.
There you go.
Now
we're back.
All right. We got some voicemails here. First one is from WobblyBoots85, our good friend Nathan. It's from November. Sorry we haven't gotten to that. It's from November 12th.
Hey! Jason, congratulations. I just wanted to call to say congratulations. I'm glad everything went good. Man, congratulations. Dave, sorry to hear about the beat us, but you got this. You'll figure it out. Love you guys. Look forward to the next episode. This is Wobbly Boots 85. Love you guys. See you later.
Wobbly Boots, man, we love you too, man.
Love you.
Thank you for having faith that I'm going to beat the beat us.
It really does help on that kind of stuff, I think.
Yeah.
Also, the that was one excitable congratulations, and I do appreciate it.
It was. It made me feel warm inside.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, you know, I've like lost 40 pounds now.
You have?
Yeah.
Damn, buddy. Good job.
Thanks.
Am I going to recognize you if you, you know, turn sideways in the wind?
I'm still ugly.
Gotcha. Oh, the tall, ugly guy. Yeah, that's my boy. All right.
Yeah.
I got him.
All right. Now we've got a voice. All the rest of this is Jordan Valdez. And
he goes for it. Yeah.
He goes for it. Like, yeah. So Jordan Valdez from December 15th.
Hello, DC on Screen. This is Bat Jordan Valdez calling in with a few thoughts from things from your last episode that I wanted to talk about. First of all, I believe Dave is watching Aquaman right now as I'm recording this, which makes me super jealous. Dave, I hope you are enjoying it so much. And I had a little bit of a consolation prize because I had just finished going to Burger King and getting some Aquaman toys. I've got four of them now. certainly, I wish I were in the theater, as well. I've still got 5 more days before my Thursday, December 20th, screening that I'm so excited about. But, anyway, hope you're enjoying it, Dave, despite my jealousy. But anyway, what I wanted to talk about regarding your latest episode was first regarding the Blue Beetle movie. One thing that I think you guys were talking about, you know, if Ted Kord were in it too, in addition to Jaime, that would be really cool. I think it would be really cool if they tied it into the Ted Kord Blue Beetle / Booster Gold movie that's also in development right now. And sort of, you know, whichever one comes first, they could either have at the end of the Ted Kord Blue Beetle / Booster Gold movie, if they had Jaime getting the scarab, or they could do the Jaime Reyes movie first and have Ted Kord in it as a supporting mentor character, and then have the his movie with Booster Gold done as a prequel to that, or something. I could envision something like that, so I think that would be really cool. But in any case, I'm very excited about both those films, actually. So yeah, I can't wait to see how those develop. But the other thing I want to talk about is, you mentioned in the last episode that Christopher James Baker, who just got cast on Stargirl, that you weren't familiar with him. Actually, you are familiar with him, even if you don't realize it. He was actually in one of my favorite Gotham episodes, actually, Spirit of the Goat, absolutely batastic Bullock-focused episode from back in season one. One of the episodes that really emphasizes one of the things I love most about season one of Gotham, which was all the police procedural stuff with the GCPD. And anyway, but yeah, some absolutely batastic stuff with Bullock in that episode that I just, yeah, I love it. So anyway, I can't wait to see what he brings to Stargirl. Another example of DC's batastic legacy casting across the board. But yeah, I guess that's going to do it for me. On this voicemail, Batcat Forever, from the first kiss to the last. I will talk to y'all later. Bye-bye.
You know, it's funny, when I was on the way to the theater to go see Aquaman, Jordan called, and the phone was in my pocket, and I didn't realize that it was someone calling for DC on screen. So I answered it, and he was like, holy crap! And so we talked, like, the entire, it was like a 20-minute drive, and when, whatever it was. And because I was... That day, that was my little sister's graduation, my youngest sister's college graduation.
Yeah, you like shuffled back from Montgomery on 0 hours sleep and managed to make it. Yeah.
And actually, Jordan actually did me a huge favor by talking to me for like 20
keeping
minutes.
You the hell awake.
I was trying to stay awake.
Right.
yeah, we talked a lot about Tom King and a lot about Aquaman. I am a little jealous of the Aquaman toys from Burger King. I was not aware of those. I don't keep up with that specifically, and
I don't. But it's immediately like if I went to Burger King and they had like a Aquaman toy set, I could see myself like getting it and being like, I'll get these today, later.
Oh yeah, I'm not above it, dude. I've got Beware the Batman toys. Like I specifically, when we lived together, I was specifically driving down the street to our McDonald's and
to
just buying the toys.
I get you. I've still got, you know, Happy Meal toys from my childhood that were like the original 89 and the Batman Returns toys in storage right now.
Yeah.
Still
I've got a couple of those.
I've got a little penguin car that can shoot a little umbrella. It's fantastic.
All right. So the Blue Beetle movie, you know, there is a rumor out there, and I didn't consider it big enough to throw into the news, but also knew that we were going to be talking about it here. I would love to see the Berlanti Booster Gold movie.
Sure. Oh yeah.
Like, but you know, I know that they're doing this Jaime Reyes Blue Beetle. I would love to see Ted Kord. We haven't heard about the Berlanti stuff in a long time. What I think would be cool is if they did both. Like if they did like make the Berlanti thing into the DCEU and did Blue Beetle, Ted Kord, and Booster. And then just did the Jaime Reyes as well. Or what would be cool is if they did a little bit of both. If they did like a DCEU movie with Blue Beetle and then a DCEU movie that had Booster Gold. And it was primarily the same story or two facets of the same story. One of them from the perspective of Booster Gold. One of them from the perspective of Blue Beetle. That would be a lot of fun. And have them go on different adventures. But their actions
and
their own separate adventures.
You and Jordan. I haven't heard a version of this I wouldn't watch yet.
Right?
You can have so much fun with those characters. There's no version of this that I would object to yet.
Yeah, like you could have them go on their own separate adventures, but and interacting throughout,
and even
but also
different versions of Blue Beetle. All of them, fine, great, yeah. Go make that movie. Like it bothers me. It's one of the things that really bothers me about the Arrowverse is having seen all those damn Cord Industries boxes and never there's no payoff yet. Pisses me off. Like I need something. Like clearly they wanted to, and they haven't done it, and. Yeah, originally, like Ray Palmer, you know, Brandon Routh was maybe scheduled to be him, and then it became the Atom, and that was fine. He's great as the Atom, but there was clearly something happening at the Warner Brothers level for a long mm-hmm. time now, and I need a payoff for that. I really do. Give me Blue and Gold, yeah. man. Some capacity.
Yeah.
Honestly, either of them, I don't care.
Yeah, absolutely. Speaking of that. When X-Men starts happening in the MCU, I kind of hope they do like X-Men Blue Team, X-Men Gold Team.
Hmm. Yeah.
I always liked that concept from the comics. Anyway.
I'll take that.
Blue and Gold just made me think of it.
Yeah.
The Christian James Baker thing. Yeah, I had forgotten about that, but you know what? I loved that episode. Spirit of the Goat was a fantastic episode.
It was.
And
it
as
really
much
was.
as much as I love serialized storytelling, I think I liked Gotham the most when it was a police procedural.
No, I'm not sure. No, I enjoy it more this way. But
like, I like the serialization, but
I like the fact that they've gone from one to the other. That part really, it really makes me happy.
Yeah, I liked the idea of the serialization of Gotham to be like the B story almost,
yeah.
And like the A story is the. But you know what? I complain that Lucifer does exactly what I wish Gotham did. So
they do it at a much slower pace.
Mm-hmm. I don't want it as slow as Lucifer, but I did enjoy just taking in how the Gotham City Police Department was working.
I think that was a really important footprint, but I do enjoy how it's paid off.
It got so wacky so quick.
It did, but in a way that I think, based on what I'm seeing about this last season, and the fact mm-hmm. that they're able to plan their last season, that is so important. I wish every show got to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're going to look back on the show and be like, man, that's required reading, you know? I think it's, right now. It does. It really does depend on the last season. Like, you can tank a thing. I mean, I will never forgive The Sopranos for that last episode.
I know. There are Smallville fans who will never forgive that last episode of Smallville. And I'm like, it was good. It was fine. Like, it wasn't like the drawn-out fight you wanted to see with Darkseid, but that wasn't the point.
No.
The point was that final scene with Lex, man.
Yeah.
Spoilers for people who haven't seen Smallville. I just realized my wife is one of those.
He came back and made that thing meaningful in a way that it paid off for a character that you hadn't seen in a while. And it did stay true to the concept that the show always had the no flight, no tight.
Mm-hmm.
That was in the writer's room, probably. Like, just that little plaque.
Right.
It stayed true to itself, and it actually paid off in a way that I appreciated. And don't get me wrong, man. Smallville takes a while to get there sometimes. Like, there's a percentage of that show where you're just watching and thinking, like, well, this is fun, but what are we doing?
Yeah.
Same with Gotham. There's a percentage of the time where you're watching going, like, well, this is fun, but I think mm-hmm. overall we're going to appreciate the payoff. Just about right now. I think so.
There are huge swaths of that show that I have enjoyed immensely, even in the worst of times.
Yeah.
So I will consider it worth it anyway.
I think so. I just would resent a bad conclusion at this point, which is not a groundbreaking viewpoint.
No, it's not.
What's next?
But that's okay. This is not a groundbreaking show. Sorry. Just like I heard that, and all I heard in my head was that bit from The Simpsons where President Clinton shows up and tells Lisa if she complains about something enough, she'll get her way. And Marge goes, well, that's a pretty crappy lesson to teach a kid. And Bill goes, hey, I'm a pretty crappy president. I love The Simpsons.
They're fantastic.
Alrighty. So, Jordan Valdez voicemail from December 21st.
Hey, DC on Screen. This is Bat Jordan Valdez calling in.
about after listening to your Aquaman review. I'm recording this on Friday night, December 21st. I went to go see it Thursday evening, 5 p.m. That was the earliest I could see it. I don't have Amazon Prime, so I know I was so jealous of you, Dave. I was talking to you right before you went in and saw it, but now I don't have to be jealous anymore. And I have to say, it was absolutely worth the wait because I love this film too. It just oozes Jason Momoa's Aquaman's personality from start to finish, and I love that. I love him as Aquaman, and he's just wildly entertaining throughout the film. The action, I mean, right from the start, you get first the Atlanta action sequence, and then you get the one on the submarine, and it's just like all of it just blew me away. But for me, the standout sequence of the film is the Sicily sequence, which I don't know. I'm curious to hear you guys' take on this. I sort of see it as an inverse of the No Man's Land sequence from Wonder Woman, where with the Sicily sequence, first you get this sort of quiet scene in Sicily. It's peaceful, and it's really the scene where you see Arthur and Mara start to sort of bond, and Mara start to appreciate the surface world more and see the beauty in the surface world. And then it leads into the huge action sequence with Black Manta. And I got to say, Black Manta in this film, I love Patrick Wilson as Ocean Master, but Black Manta in terms of the villain steals the show for me. It sort of reminds me of the 2011 Green Lantern film, where I loved Hector Hammond and Parallax in that movie, but Sinestro was the standout for me in that film, and made me think that a sequel was going to be even better with him as the villain. And so I get the same feeling from Aquaman. I loved Aquaman, but it's like I think about a sequel with Black Manta as the main villain, which is what they're setting up, and I just like the possibilities are endless for how just even more batastic that would be. Like I just can't even. But this movie, wow, that Sicily sequence. But anyway, going back to what I was saying, it's sort of the inverse of No Man's Land sequence. No Man's Land sequence starts out with the big action sequence and then moves into that peaceful scene with Diana and Steve in that town, and Diana seeing snow for the first time, seeing a different side of the world away from Themyscira. So sort of see a similar parallel with the Sicily sequence in Aquaman. But I got to say, the visuals of this film are just awe-inspiring. Like, I feel like that's one thing about the entire DCEU. Just all the films are just visually breathtaking. And that's certainly the case here with Aquaman, with all the underwater creatures, all the underwater stuff. It is unbelievable. So, yeah, I love this film. Cannot wait to see it again. Batcat forever, from the first kiss to the last. I'll talk to y'all later. Bye-bye.
All right, Jordan, man, I'm glad you enjoyed Aquaman. We enjoyed it quite a bit as well. Obviously, if you go back and listen to the review, I know you did because you say you did. You want to know about our opinions about the Sicily sequence and whether or not it was the inverse of No Man's Land. I hadn't thought about it, but I can totally see it.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with that.
I thought it was a perfectly. It was a great scene to get Mira on the side of the surface dwellers.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I can see it. I think there's
a moment in a lot of comic book movies where somebody with superpowers has mm-hmm. to identify with the people they're protecting.
Right.
And it doesn't happen, and it's different. Like, somebody without them, you already kind of see that in the character. You already know, like, that's one of us. But
yeah.
Somebody without them, there does have to be a moment where you tie them into your genealogy.
I don't necessarily think that it's even about superpowers. I think in any real story, by hook or by crook, there's got to be a relatability factor between the protagonist and the people that person is protecting. That was one of the big downfalls of Star Trek Generations, for instance, or Kirk, sacrifices himself on Viridian 3, but we never actually, as an audience, meet the people he's protecting. And he never met the people he's protecting. I think that does rob that sequence of gravitas.
That's 5 minutes of film you'd probably have really appreciated. Yeah, I get that.
Yeah, I think
it doesn't take much. It does not take much. You present a people and a city, and you have like a small child say something cute, and you're done.
Right, and that look at something
that happens all the time.
You look at something like the Die Hard movies, and you say, well, he doesn't really interact with a whole lot of people there. But I said, by hook or by crook, you mm-hmm. have John McClane, who he's hard to kill. Yeah. But aside from
that's
that,
a superpower.
He presents as the everyman.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think there's a lot to say for Yeah, there's a lot to say for she's got to come to that point. And they did it beautifully here in Aquaman. they may have, you know, just for a minute forgotten they weren't National Treasure with their little puzzle. But it was fine.
It was... I enjoyed that part of the movie. At no point was I like, well, we could have cut this. I really enjoyed that part of the movie. It was character building because of their relationship.
Yeah, like...
Like, the
yeah,
point
they
isn't that they
other.
Went on a little mission together. The point was that they learned something about each other. That was it.
Right. They needed each other to succeed.
Yeah. Like, they saw that the value important. In each other. That's a huge part of any successful relationship, period.
Absolutely. And I'm on board. I loved Black Manta. I did enjoy Orm. I actually did enjoy Orm quite a bit.
Oh, yeah.
I think I like them equally.
He's fantastic, and he's a great arc, and I really hope we see him again in some kind of hero role. Like, I think they laid the groundwork for Patrick Wilson to come back and be someone that we're rooting for.
Mm-hmm.
And that maybe he still has his same values. Like, he was still fighting for, you know, like he had an ecological mindset when he was doing this. So that's something you can, like, include in the next movie, is him being very earth-minded overall and still make him a hero. And I think it'll be a lot of fun. Also,
like, the first thing I would do in a sequel,
in that role. It was just fun to watch.
Oh, absolutely. The first thing I would have in a sequel would be Aquaman in the brig talking to Orm and telling him about something awesome he did. Just to, as a callback to Brave and the Bold.
Yeah, that would be fine. That'd be cool.
Which, if you want a recommendation, Randy, there's a recommendation.
Yeah,
go watch Brave and the Bold.
Tear that the hell up. It's
we literally have Aquaman sitting down there with a big book of stories
of
that he of his adventures, reading them to his brother. And verily,
it's fantastic.
Amazing. It's outrageous adventure.
Also, if I had told you that, if I had told you that there was going to be a film. An Aquaman film that had a Black Manta in it.
Uh-huh.
First of all, you'd have thought, I don't know how that's going to work. And second, if I told you it's going to be a very realistic looking costume. I mean, super realistic. Like, the comic accurate,
mm-hmm.
hardcore comic accurate. Your first thought might have been, why are you doing this to me? Go fuck yourself. But so help me. That is a super accurate version of him, and they made it work.
Yeah.
And they did. They made him a believable baddie that I get his backstory, and you know, in the next installment, I'm going to get why he's who he is, and it's going to flesh out that story, and it's going to give a lot to it. They've set up a sequel so well. There's so much more they can do in the next time.
Yeah, what I was saying, though, is, like, first thing I would do is make that joke that – references Brave and the Bold.
Yeah.
Second thing I do, though, is definitely have Arthur coming to Orm for guidance, even if it's you wouldn't do that, so I'm going to do the opposite of that kind of thing. Because,
no, like, again, theme of this episode a little bit, but, like, Thor goes to Loki at times, and I'm like, all right, what's going on here?
Yeah.
What's the clever move?
Yeah.
Yeah. This is what they're really doing. Okay, thanks.
And Arthur's never been king before. Like, as far as I can tell, it doesn't even seem like he's been able to hold down a job. I'm not sure that's true. They didn't dive into that.
I don't.
No pun intended.
Yeah. I don't know if you have to. They didn't explore his SES what preceded this film. But it will. It'll be a cool dynamic going forward. They left a lot on the table there. And, God, I'm hungry for it. I want more.
Yeah. All right, let's get to this next one. The Jordan Valdez voicemail from December 22nd.
Hey, DC on Screen. This is Bat Jordan Valdez calling in response to your Elseworlds review. Wanted to talk about how much I adored this crossover. It is my favorite of the Arrowverse crossovers so far. And that's really saying something for me anyway, because I've loved them all. So I was blown away by this crossover. The biggest thing for me was going to Gotham City and meeting Batwoman. I loved all of that. That was the highlight of the crossover for me. So the Arrow episode was definitely my favorite of the three episodes of the crossover. But I loved all of that. Love what we've seen so far of Ruby Rose as Batwoman. I, for one, cannot wait for her own series and really hope it gets picked up. Loved all the Easter eggs throughout it. Seeing different cells of Batman's Rogues Gallery, seeing Nora freeze and seeing Psycho Pirate. I understand wanting to see more of Psycho Pirate, but they're clearly setting him up to have a much bigger role, of course, in Christ on Infinite Earth, which makes sense. So I can't wait to see him next year's crossover as well. Love how they set that up in this year's crossover. But yeah, I can't wait for that. Psycho Pirate's a character that I really came to really love, thanks to what Tom King has done with him recently in his run. But I love seeing him in live action. I love teasing a little bit of World's Finest team up between Batwoman and Supergirl. I've always loved Supergirl and Batgirl's friendship, going all the way back to probably when I saw the new Batman Adventures episode Girls Night Out as a kid, and that's probably where I first really came to love that relationship, that friendship. So I would love to see him do a similar thing with Batwoman and Supergirl in the Arrowverse. So I love that. Love finally getting Amazo paid off. You know, back in season 2 of Arrow, we had the Amazo, we met Ivo, but here we actually get the Amazo android, and wow, what a fight sequence that was. Love seeing Barry and Oliver swapped. For me, like they took inspiration from the concept of Elseworlds with this, where it's the concept of what if so-and-so was different, and even though we didn't actually go to Earth where that was the case, to different Earths where that was the case, within Earth 1, they honored the concept of Elseworlds, of the Elseworlds idea from the comics, and they just gave a twist on it. And I love when they do stuff like that, because as fans, it keeps us on our toes, because it makes it so that we don't always know what to expect, even if we're very familiar with the source material. So I love that sort of twist in the way they did it, and some hilarious scenes like the one where Barry got some payback on Ollie from shooting him before. So yeah, absolutely adored this crossover. Batcat forever, from the first kiss to the last. Bye-bye.
All right, man. I don't know that I have a whole lot to say about this. I think I said most of what I had to say in our Elseworlds review. I didn't love their portrayal of Psycho Pirate. I didn't see a reason for Nora Freeze at all in this story. But I do love Supergirl and Batgirl. I'm interested to see how that might play out with Batwoman and Supergirl.
Yeah.
I understand they took inspiration from Elseworlds, but I felt like it was a little clickbaity. I felt like they were promising me something they had no intention of giving. So while I enjoyed it, I was a little let down.
Well, you just felt a little betrayed by the word.
Yeah, I felt betrayed by the word, because it was like, you know, Earth 1, about 2 seconds of Earth 38, and, you know, the Flash from Earth 90 for about 2 minutes.
Right.
Like, and a screwed up version of Earth 1.
I mean, I get it, but I also feel like they may have bookended those expectations with Crisis on Infinite Earths coming up, you know?
Yeah, which... But when you give me something called Elseworlds that isn't Elseworlds, and then you're like, hey, look, Crisis on Infinite Earths, I'm going to be like, is it though?
Well, those are two different concepts in actual comics, you know?
Yeah, I know.
I get that.
I know.
I get it. But I really did enjoy the crossover.
I did too.
We obviously did an episode about this. Like, we enjoyed the crossover. We enjoyed Gotham in general. It was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing he brings up that I wish I could speak to more better is, I love Psycho Pirate's involvement in the DCU as an overall concept, because he's huge in a way that he's a small guy with a small set of powers, and yet he is so freaking influential, damn it, because mm-hmm. of what he can do and how he's used. And he mentions Psycho Pirate in the Rebirth continuity, and an interview that I just read, really, is he's saying well, you mentioned Psycho, you mentioned Crisis and Psycho Pirate and important event and blah 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 blah, and he kind of says the interviewer says with the fallout from the Watchmen related stuff, it's interesting to see Psycho Pirate show up right now,
mm-hmm.
and that is also true. The Doomsday Clock stuff is really taking a lot of chances. And to see that show up in Rebirth, see Psycho Pirate show up in Rebirth, and that's a nice combination. And Tom King says, yeah, you're too smart for me. I'm trying to hide something I should be hiding. The fact is, as established in Grant Morin's Animal Man, the pirate remembers continuity that no longer exists.
Yeah.
It's one of the appeals of having him in the book and tying him into the story spine of the greater DCU. That's pretty vague, but that's the best I can do. Even the interviewer says, like, dude, that's not really that vague. I get it. That he is a powerful weapon. When you really look at what Psycho Pirate has been around for, he's a heavy hitter.
Mm-hmm.
And combining him in the comics right now with the inclusion of Dr. Manhattan on the rest of the universe, this is possibly a big deal, and it sounds like we'll see him again.
Yeah, I mean, Psycho Pirate to the DC or to the DC universe is basically like the lost library at Alexandria, you know?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Like the anti-Flash death. Every time you see a Flash die, Psycho Pirate's there to remember it. To memorialize it.
Gently swaying in the background.
Yeah.
And that is a reference to that Mitchell and Webb look, the Inebriati. Go look that up on YouTube.
Fucking sketch, man. Go.
The idea that it's just an organization of drunk people at every major thing in history.
Go spend 6 minutes of your life laughing. It's great.
Yeah. At every major event in history, we've been there, gently swaying in the background.
Yeah. The motto, can only have... Like you should spend your entire day having slightly less than 2 drinks.
Yeah.
Which the first time I heard, I totally got. Because like if you've had slightly less than 2 drinks, that's the best pool you'll ever play. You are a billiards master.
Finish that second drink, though.
You finish that second drink and it's stop betting. Stop hustling. Stop putting money on the table.
Anyway, let's yeah, for Jordan also sends us a voicemail for December 24th.
Oh, Christmas Eve episode.
In reference to our Titans review.
What's up, DC on Screen? This is Bat Jordan Valdez. I guess this is voicemail 106 for me. But I wanted to call in and talk a little bit about Titans because I just finished listening to your Titans review, and I absolutely loved it, and I absolutely loved the show. So I wanted to talk with you guys about it. For me, I love pretty much everything about Season 1, but for me, all the stuff with Dick Grayson in particular was the highlight for me. This is something I've always said about the Birds of Prey TV show, is how it explores aspects of the Batman mythology that we've never seen anywhere else in live action, and I feel that Titans does the same thing. I mean, giving us our first live action Dick Grayson in 21 years, giving us our first live action Jason Todd ever, and giving us 2 Robins in live action together for the first time ever. So I absolutely loved all of that. Loved getting really into Dick's psychology, particularly in the season finale, getting into his past, his dynamic with Jason when they meet up, his dynamic with Donna Troy and all the banter between the two of them. Love everything. Oh, the action sequences. I mean, the suit. We've seen the suit, obviously, way before the show even premiered, but just seeing it in action, in those action scenes, absolutely loved it. It's mind-blowing to me what they did with Dick Grayson. I'm totally with y'all that the season finale, it reminded me as well of a mix of Perchance to Dream and Over the Edge. Felt like the first half of the episode before things started going completely wrong, like that was Perchance to Dream, like the idyllic part of that episode. And then the second part of the episode where things went really bad, that was like Over the Edge. So I'm totally with y'all on that. In response to the question about Batman in live action on TV, I believe that it's a stipulation from the WB Fox deal for Batman 66 that Fox has exclusivity with Batman in live action on TV. But as sad as I am about Gotham ending, and I really am, one silver lining is that I do think that may open up Batman for use in full in both the Arrowverse and on Titans. So there could be a silver lining there, as much as I am super sad about Gotham ending. The other thing I wanted to say, we're never going to agree on this, but The Dark Knight Rises is my favorite live-action film of all time, so I got to come in and defend that real quick. That's going to do it for me. Batcat forever, from the first kiss to the last. I'll talk to you all later. Bye-bye.
All right, Jordy. Can I call you Jordy?
Jordy. For short.
I like Jordy. So, yeah, I had not thought about is it being the first live action Dick Grayson in, what was it, you said 21 years? Is that right?
It's been a minute.
And, more jaded individuals might just eschew Chris O'Donnell completely and say, this is the first live action Robin since Burt Ward. And, of course, first live action Jason Todd. Absolutely. I love Titans. It is my favorite DC show right now. And I say that with every expectation that Swamp Thing is going to wind up being my favorite.
Possibly. But,
I'm having high hopes for that, and I don't know quite why.
That was a great, great first foot, man. I mean, they mm-hmm. knocked it out of the park on that show.
Mm-hmm. I totally get the Perchance to Dream and Over the Edge. Like I think we talked about Over the Edge, but I didn't think about Perchance to Dream, the idyllic part of that. That was interesting.
I think Perchance to Dream
is my favorite. Did we talk about that?
I could swear we did, but I don't know.
Okay. Well, hey, whatever.
I can't swear about anything we've said.
Those are like two of my favorite TAS episodes.
They were
so
great.
Why not?
Yeah.
That was great. That makes sense. That all tracks. I'm going to be kind of a dick here.
Mm.
Not a Dick Grayson, but
an actual...
just saying The Dark Knight Rises is your favorite and leaving it there, that's not a defense.
No. I mean, it is, in a way. It is all subjective.
I mean, yes, absolutely. It's all subjective. We're not going to ding Fans Without Borders does, but we will call them out
absolutely
go listen to that show because it's a great show.
Yeah, I don't want to take away from anything that's happening, but dear God, like I don't understand it. I just don't understand it.
I think it's all about Batman and Catwoman, man.
Maybe
if Anne Hathaway played Silver St. Cloud, he wouldn't have been into it.
He does have a a lean into Batcat. I get that.
I mean, that's probably not fair. He probably would have liked it just fine. I just don't know that it would have been his favorite.
I don't know.
Let us know, Jordan. Let us know, man.
Yeah.
If Anne Hathaway was playing Silver St. Cloud instead of Selena Kyle.
Weigh in on that.
How do you think you would have felt? Let's get to your next voicemail on January 8th. That's for our Gotham Season 5 premiere. A lot of Batcat in there.
Mm-hmm.
Let's do that.
What's up, DC on Screen? This is Bat Jordan Valdez calling in about the Gotham Season 5 premiere, which I absolutely loved. What a batastic way to kick off Season 5. For me, of course, my favorite stuff in the episode was the Batcat stuff. I just absolutely loved Bruce and Selina's teams together. They were heartbreaking for me, both as a massive Catwoman fan and as a massive Batcat shipper, seeing Selina in the state she's in and just seeing issues between her and Bruce's relationship, I guess you could say, in the episode. But I know that happier times are coming for them because there was a Batcat kiss teased in one of the recent promos that I am super excited about. So I have that to look forward to, I know. So I just can't wait to see where things go with their relationship. But it was a nice surprise to be to get them together in this episode because I was expecting Selina to have gotten out of Gotham. And so I wasn't expecting to see her and Bruce together for the first couple episodes, maybe. So that was definitely a nice surprise for me as a massive Batcat shipper. I loved it. Love that Bruce is there for her, just like he promised he would be at the end of Season 4. He's there with her. He's keeping his promise. And you just see how determined he is to help her throughout the episode and just reinforcing just how strong his love for her is. And I just absolutely adored all of that. It's heartbreaking, as a lot of it was for me at the same time. In terms of Bruce taking on Scarecrow's henchmen, I'm totally with Jason on this. I definitely got Batman vibes from it. I've been saying this for so much of Gotham that we've gotten Batman, what I call Batman glimpses, and they just, as the show's progressed, become more and more frequent. I think the first one that I really felt strongly, where I really saw Batman in David Mazouz's performance, was back in Season 1 when Alfred took him to confront Tommy Elliot, and Alfred says, there's no shame if you want
if you don't want to go through with this. And Bruce just turns to Alfred and he says, there would be immense shame in that. And that was the first time when I really saw Batman in DeVito's performance. And just as the show's progressed, just getting more and more Batman in young Bruce. And so I definitely felt that this was definitely an instance of that when he was taking out Scarecrow's henchmen. It reminded me a lot of the Batman Begins Doc scene, where it's just Bruce really seeing it from the criminal's perspective and seeing Bruce take out all these men. And also I love that there's also, you know, a Dark Knight Rises nod in the episode, as you mentioned, with Penguin's knee brace. But yeah, I absolutely love that. Yeah, like I said, what a bat-tastic start of the season, and I can't wait to see where things go moving forward. Batcat forever, from the first kiss to the last. Bye-bye.
Full disclosure, I'm taking notes on the Jordan Valdez voicemails with a black ultra-fine point Sharpie. And I very much enjoy the smell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so contradicting the point of the notes by being high.
Hmm?
Exactly.
Oh.
You're hosting a show right now. And you should probably check into it.
I'm doing a bang up job.
Yeah.
Bang up job. What?
Just
Batman vibes. Season one, Tommy Elliott. Yes.
Yes. Absolutely. Also, Batman vibes in the last episode. Totally got those. Thank you. Thank you, Jordan.
I don't even remember that, but sounds good. I may have disagreed at the time.
Kicking ass with a knife.
I don't remember. I don't remember the scene. I don't remember the podcast.
Fair enough. Imagine. Tiny Bruce.
Uh-huh.
Kicking a bunch of people's asses with night vision goggles. Sounds pretty
batty. I do remember that.
Right?
Yeah, that was cool.
Pretty batty.
I do remember that. Yeah.
It's a winner.
Yeah, this marker smells good.
Yeah.
All right. All right, so we got one more, it looks like. Nope. Sorry. Two more. Is it two more?
I don't know. I haven't looked at the total yet.
No, it's one more.
Yep.
It's one more.
One more. Okay.
One more. We're going to talk about a little bit about Plastic Man.
Gotcha.
And the Elongated Man.
What's up, DC on Screen? This is Bat Jordan Valdez calling in with voicemail probably number 1,476. I think that's what Jason's count was. But I just wanted to talk about some stuff you talked about on your latest news episode, which I loved. First up, regarding the Plastic Man, Elongated Man debate. I love both of them. I think they're both fantastic characters. I prefer Plastic Man slightly, though. I think with this movie, I think it's going to be really exciting. I think they could sort of go with a similar tone to what we're seeing so far from Shazam and do something similar to that, but maybe even a little more zany. I think back to that Batman the Brave and the Bold episode with, you know, Woozy and everything and Baby. And I just think they could go all out with that and just have a ton of fun. I love Elongated Man too, of course. I love what they're doing with On the Flash, which interestingly enough, I feel like it's sort of an amalgamation of Plastic Man and Elongated Man, because it sort of feels like he has more Plastic Man's personality. Even though he's a detective like Elongated Man in the comics, he's also got, he was a corrupt detective, so it's sort of the criminal aspect to Plastic Man that kind of given him a little bit. But yeah, I love that portrayal of him. Identity Crisis is a favorite comic of mine, probably my favorite Justice League type comic ever. And so, of course, he has a massive role in that, so love that as well. So yeah, I love both characters, but Plastic Man, just, he always cracks me up, and I love him, so he gets the edge for me. Want to talk a little bit about the DCUAOM films that you guys are talking about. Super pumped for everything they're doing, but especially Batman Hush and Batman, especially number one, Batman Hush. I can't wait for all the Batcat stuff. We'll hopefully get in that. And then Batman Long Halloween, another comic, another Jeff Loeb comic. It's a ton of Batcat stuff, so hopefully we get more of what Batman Got My Gaslight, the animated film, gave us with some batastic Batcat moments in the DCUAOM line. In terms of the Justice League versus Fatal Five cast, I'm super pumped about it. First of all, not only is it a Justice League animated series reunion, it's also sort of a The Batman reunion, because you've got George Newbern, who went on to reprise his role as Superman on The Batman. You've got Kevin Michael Richardson, who was the Joker on the Batman. You've got Tom Kenny, who is the Penguin on the Batman. You've got the guy, Peter Jessup, who he's gone on to do a lot of DC roles, but he was in the Hawkman episode of the Batman. What Goes Up, Tara Strong, she was Vicki Vale on the Batman. So you've just got a ton of the Batman voice actors returning as well. So that's super exciting. Batcat Forever, from the first kiss to the last. Talk to y'all later. Bye-bye.
I am super excited about the Plastic Man movie. I do prefer Elongated Man more overall as a character, but I do love Plastic Man. I love those Brave and the Bold episodes. I do want it to be woozy like woozy, zany like woozy, and all of that stuff. Like, I think it could be a lot of fun.
I also kind of agree as long as the Flash version is an amalgamation.
Absolutely. I think as long as they keep the heart, one of my favorite stories with Plastic Man was when he had given up the life, and his kid was like, you know, you got to go save the world. He's the only one that can stop, you know, Martian Manhunter from destroying everything.
Right.
Because he's impervious to the telepathy. And he can shapeshift, mm-hmm. and he goes and saves the world and, like, comes back to his kid. Like, that was just fantastic. Like, I don't know. I like the redemption story for Plastic Man.
That's huge.
And I love Identity Crisis. And that's where I really got into Ralph Dibny. And I know Identity Crisis by Brad Meltzer. There's a recommendation.
Yeah,
It's fantastic.
And that was a huge turn for that character, for sure. That was a huge turn for the Justice League.
Mm-hmm.
The whole Sue Dibny thing. That was big.
Yeah, it's feeling petty now, but I still want to say take that, Randy, and I want to actually have like lady backup dancers go take that, Randy. But I hope he knows this all in good fun. I'm just playing, man.
Right.
But yeah, Identity Crisis is fantastic. Huge turning point. Huge story. There are at least three panels in that story that are seared into my brain.
Mm-hmm.
And I won't spoil it for you if you haven't read it. You just need to go check it out.
Fair enough.
All right. So Batman Hush, Batman Long Halloween. It's funny. Jeff Loeb is like overseeing Marvel television. But it looks like DC's going to have more than enough Loeb this year, too.
Yeah.
Jeff Loeb is fantastic.
He wrote some iconic stories. Like, he put a huge imprint on this, on these characters. It can't be overstated, sorry.
I mean, Jeff Loeb had some of the best Smallville stuff. Jeff Loeb did, you know, Superman for All Seasons, Batman the Long Halloween, Batman Dark Victory, Spider-Man Blue, Daredevil Yellow, like really fantastic Marvel and DC stuff.
Yeah.
Both sides of the aisle. The guy's fantastic.
Just good writer overall.
His son Sam was fantastic too. God rest his soul. Hmm. Like just really good stuff. So, anything that says Jeff Loeb on it, you should be reading. Superman, Batman, whatever that was it called Superman, Batman, or Batman, Superman? Either way. The first arc, I think, was the Public Enemies arc with Ed McGinnis was drawing that. And, yeah, it's just, he's unimpeachable. It's a good word for it.
I'm in the little one of his right now that's like Batman, Superman, Absolute Power.
Oh, that's a good one.
Never heard of it before. Never heard of it before. I found it for a buck somewhere. And, yeah, yep, I'll take that.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, think that's it.
We covered a lot. Are we done?
I think so. I'm closing my notebook. Did you hear that? I closed my notebook. I'm putting it on my pile of bags.
You can make it next like to my some desk. Kind of Foley sound that sounds like closing a notebook, but I don't think it's
I'm having
worth
withdrawals.
It. Yeah.
I need the Sharpie.
Yeah. It's rough. A lot of water.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe some meditation.
Right. I've got a lot of water.
Yeah.
I've got a Great Value purified drinking water here, and mm-hmm. I've got a Tangerine LaCroix.
Yeah, those are fantastic.
Which, by the way, I know we talked about LaCroix, mm-hmm. but if you go to the LaCroix website, they actually say you pronounce it LaCroix.
LaCroix or LaCroix? What are we doing?
LaCroix. LaCroix says that you pronounce it LaCroix.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we're good here. Yeah,
we are good. Not great, but we're good.
I'll take that.
Keep some DC on your screen.
Good.
Our opening narration was from Dan Juergens' The History of the DC Universe, Part 3 of 10, as featured in DC 52, Week 4. It was performed by me, David C. Robertson. Intro music by Jason Goss and Michael Shackelford. Michael's band, Future Elevators, could be found on Spotify or future-elevators.com. Our introduction was performed by Effie Opelders of the fantastic podcast Stealing the Remote, which lives on SoundCloud. It can also be found on iTunes and Stitcher. We are proudly in partnership with TV Time, TV show calendar and social media site that lets you keep track of what you're watching, what your friends are watching, and where you all left off. DC On Screen is a maladjusted production. Visit maladjusted.tv for more from me and Jason, including sketch comedy, an improvised web series, vlogs, parodies, and more.
Are you maladjusted?